Hey, welcome, welcome,
welcome,
welcome to the Marshaverse. This is a place in the rest of the universe where I come to make shit make sense.
From the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good morning. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. I'm Marsha. This is the Marshaverse, and you are welcome here. We love to get together at midnight. There's that magic time, that portal between yesterday and tomorrow, but it's right now. And right now, we're going to just chill out, talk shit, have some refreshments, and just have a good time. This show is, when I started it, I wanted to just have a cool place to hang out with my friends, talk about show business, talk about life, talk about all kinds of stuff. But before we get into the nitty gritty, like I said, I like to, since I've invited you over, I like to serve refreshments to me, because you're not here and you can't drink this shit through the screen. So we have cannabis and cognac. And tonight I'm using a tulip glass because I like to switch up my glasses and I don't care about rules and you're supposed to drink out of this glass and that glass. I'll drink out of a bread cup, which is what I'm drinking my water. But tonight we have a little Martell, which has traditionally been my favorite cognac. And here you go. Here's to you and me. And for cognac, for cannabis, I think I'll just rely on my old faithful Stizzy vape with this unknown cartridge, whatever the heck it is. Just gonna have a little bit just to take the edge off, and so it doesn't really matter. Here we go. Yay! Now we can talk. It's been a crazy couple of hundred days, and I have this comediosophy and sheology segment because even though I am a stand-up comedian and a pretty damn good one, to me, the most important part of that phrase is stand-up. I think you have to be a stand-up kind of person, or at least I did. I always wanted to stand for something. And so a lot of the things we talk about here are things that I think need to be talked about. And I ask a lot of provocative questions. I try to engage people in things. And this week, I've been talking a lot about things like the Atlantic slave trade, because people say stupid shit online that makes me nuts. One of the main things they say is they try to dismiss the whole slave question because of Africans sold their own people, which is probably the stupidest thing you could say. I made this this meme that I posted saying that it's a stupid thing to say when Europeans were slaughtering each other for the right to sell slaves. So what difference does that make how and why when the problem is what happened when we got here? And so I was talking about that, and the responses were pretty varied. But I think we need to, we have so much information at our fingertips, and AI can be a powerful tool if you don't just use it to make funny memes. You know, there's a lot of information we can get. But this administration that we're in is trying to erase all of the relevant information that would give people enough understanding to where we might be able to get past the acrimony and the unhealed wounds. But because we keep trying to bury things so that people don't have to take responsibility for anything, then it just keeps being a problem. But I think a lot of our problems stem from the fact that we have these unsolved, unhealed wounds. And I was talking one of the influencers that I follow is a scholar named Todd Sturmer, and he's a public historian and specializes in resistance history and in the patriot myth. He debunks a lot of the, you know, rah-rah propaganda that surrounds its mythology and gets away from the real issues, which is the point. Again, so nobody has to feel responsible for where we are now. And so he was talking about resistance history and how do we resist this creep into fascism that everybody is worried about. And he was talking about how we have to fight back. And I see all these people online talking about fighting back, but the way they talk about fighting makes them, to me, the same as the people they want to conquer. You just want to be king of the hill. And the problem is we have to eliminate the king of the hill mentality that there are superior people, superior nations, superior whatever, and we're not just one big national and global family. So he had made a post, and on that post, I asked, how do we fight the enemy without becoming them? I don't want to be a greedy capitalist. I don't want to be somebody who hoards resources and denies people health care and a decent living. I don't want a society where everybody has to work until they die just to barely get by. And so I don't want to fight on those terms. But it seems that not only do people want to do that, it seems silly to me when we told you what was going to happen. They told you what was going to happen. The Republican Party put out a blueprint of what they were going to do and a timeline of how they were going to do it. And we told you what was going to happen, and we told you how to avoid it. Vote for somebody else. Vote for the person who could win. That would have avoided all of that. But we can't get together enough to do that one simple thing that would avoid the fight. We seem to enjoy the cyclical, reality that we have where, you know, 100 years ago, there were red summers and there was the depression and there were people taking advantage of other people. And this seems to happen over and over and over again. When do we start to become better people? When do we start living up to our potential as human beings? And so the question is not just how do we fight, but how do we get the kind of society we deserve, the kind of society we want, where everybody has a stake and everybody has an opportunity to live a pretty decent life without interference from other people and the government. And nobody seems to want to move beyond this constant political boxing match and winner take all kind of attitude. And it seems to me, until we do evolve to diversity, equity, and inclusion, to equality, to where everybody has a stake in this nation, where everybody has a right to call themselves an American, where everybody is treated like an American, and that greedy people who are ruthless and willing to undercut, undermine, and hurt and harm people get to hoard all the resources and kind of make us jump for treats. It's it's a sad way to think that we're always going to be. And they always say, we've always been like that. It's always been, well, isn't it time to change? And that's why I invented the Church of Jesus, because I think that that's a very patriarchal way to look at life. It's all about combat, conquest, colonizing, you know, and there's no cooperation. Not conflict, but, you know, getting along. And I think that's a more feminine way of conflict resolution, and that we would do well to be mothered a bit and not so much fathered. So I invented the Church of Jesus to recognize that our Creator is individual. Our Creator is our mother. Women create life. It's just that simple. When we talk about life-giving in any species, we're talking about maternity. And that aspect of humanity is not reflected in our collective problem solving. And so I think we need to be mothered, and we need to not elevate or put down. But when you have this kind of disparity between haves and have-nots, and it can be made to seem white versus black or whatever, you have to, after a while, you know, bring this one up and make them equal so that everybody has. And that mentality is not shared by everybody. But I found somebody who does share that mentality. This content creator on TikTok who's very influential, and her presence is ubiquitous, if that's the word. And she's very thoughtful. And she sent me a poem, a spoken word poem that she wrote, that I thought reflected the kind of worldview that I have. It's a little long, but I want you to take a look at it and tell me what you think. If you don't like it, let me know. If you do have thoughts about it, let me know, and maybe we can get her on the show sometime. So take a look at this poem.
Black people, we have heard this before, but let me say it again. We are the architects, the builders, the movers, and the makers, the shakers, the trendsetters, the eye openers, the truth seekers, and the truth speakers. Remember who you are. We are the light and the dark, the sun and the moon, the air and the waters. We move mountains, we shake the earth, we walk through chaos and rise through fire. Remember who you are. We are the nurturers, the caregivers. We are love, we are grace. We are a force that cannot be stopped. We are the beginning, mitochondrial Eve. We are the end, Phoenix energy. We carry in our blood the blueprint of life, our DNA etched with the spark of creation. We are the cosmic womb. Our energy knows no bounds. It flows beyond time and space, beyond galaxies. Remember who you are. This code lives in us, passed down through generations. Our history is alive, breathed into the world through our storytelling. We hold the key, as we are the keepers of true history. Remember who you are. We walk in our purpose because the lioness does not concern herself with ants. She lifts up, she leads, she builds a future and guides the pride to flourish. The lion also doesn't concern himself with ants. He watches over his pride, protects its youth, stand guard to fight to ensure the pride's future. And the pride, it does not waste its energy on ants. It protects its own. It ensures legacy. It guards tomorrow. So as we rest, as we breathe, let us teach our children the lessons of the ancestors, the wisdom of the elders. Teach them courage and resilience. Show them what love for our people is. Show them what our spiritual connection is. Teach them who they are. And to those who try to erase us, try to shrink us, try to silence us, hear this. You cannot erase what was written in stardust. You cannot burn what was born of fire. You cannot break what refuses to bow. We don't rise in spite of you. We rise because genetically we were built to, and it burns you. No matter how much you try to keep the foot on our necks, the magic in our DNA refuses to let you. You know exactly who we are. We do not give breath to the ignorant. We do not give ground to the racists. That plan they have carried for centuries, it's tired, it's crumbling. And through it all, from slavery to police brutality, still, we rise and multiply. We will not fall. We are louder, stronger, and generationally wiser. So I say these words from the lips of the ancestors to the ears of my people near and far. Remember who we are. For the ancestors, for the elders, for the babies watching us now, remember who we are.
Thank you, Goddess Mia. And I hope that this, you know, maybe made somebody's day a little better. I was going through some videos from my past, and I came upon one that I think is pretty underrated and doesn't feature me. I'm in it as an extra, which I was lucky and happy to be at that time, but it's from the Richard Pryor Show. And he did a skit where he played a rocker called Black Death. And it's a very interesting commentary on our musical influence and how it affects young people. And so we can't really show all of it, but we'll provide a link and try to sneak in a little bit of it. But you should take a look and see. It's really, really interesting. And it's Pryor at his best. Okay, so now that all the kids are dead, what a horrible thing to say. But no, the way he his commentary on drug culture and young people was, I thought, noteworthy. So now it's time for me to introduce my guest. I know you've seen her. She's a stand-up comedian I've had the pleasure of working with a couple of times. And she's on a show called Nonas? Anyway, she's going to come and talk to us about it. And I can't wait to bring her out. So everybody say hello to Tammy Pescatelli.
Good morning, Queen.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm honored to be with you. I literally thank you. I love all the things that you are saying. I mean, it's really interesting. I feel like history has been lost in general, even if you look at comedy. Just take our small microcosm, which I'm not an expert in a lot of things, but I feel like I'm a historian of this game. And you look at now, I was at a festival just about a month ago, and I was probably the oldest one at the festival. like literally, because it's all these young kids, which maybe comedy is. I'm not even going to say that. Comedy is not just a young person's game, because we have such a voice after throughout the years. There's always been the older comics that were more seasoned that knew that. And I'm not shutting the young kids down, but nope. There were some young girls that were there and very funny, or to whatever degree that they were talking about. But they happened to say how tough it is to be a woman. And I remember literally, this is about a month ago, I'm sitting there and there were six of them on a 10-person show. And I thought, boy, we got one female comic
right
on a 10-person show. And they created such a culture with women that we were all sitting around. First of all, we never saw each other. Yeah. And it would take like a legend like you who would come and say, I want a woman. Or back in the day, a Jenny Jones who would say, I want all men out of the comedy club. And I want a female opener, a female right. feature. I think that people broke the ground and they still don't recognize that. I feel like there's not enough recognition.
No, they don't know. When I started, first of all, the three-act comedy clubs were just coming into being.
Sure.
And so it very quickly got into a rhythm where it was always a male headliner and a male host. And the middle act was usually a novelty act mm-hmm. of some sort. It was a guy with a guitar, it was a prop comic, it was a comedy team, or a woman.
Yeah, we were novelty acts.
It was a novelty act.
It's the truth.
I was working at the Laugh Stop in Newport Beach, and I after opening, middle act for a couple of times, I said, I have as much material as these guys. I am as funny as they are. People know me as well as they do. I want a headline. And I was ready to just give it to him. He said, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I should have asked before.
Yeah.
But then Mitzi betrayed us. I never forgave her for the belly room. I never forgave her, because the women that were coming up when I was coming up were standing toe to toe with the guys and didn't need their own space. They just needed more visibility.
Yeah.
So put us in the belly room in the top in this little room that wasn't even finished at the time, I thought was the worst thing in the world. And I refused to ever work there. Now, a lot of women found it like an opportunity.
Sure. And I get that. I see both sides of it, because I didn't have, I was a Mitzi. She was terrific to me. But by the time I got in, obviously, no one was there. It wasn't now the heyday of the Comedy Store. It was, three patrons, one who didn't know who they were there, and 14 comics in the back. She didn't put us in the belly room, but that's also because the Comedy Store was not popping. So we were lucky to have people in the main room. It is funny, too. I always try to approach comedy the way I think I saw you approach comedy. There weren't a lot of yous. There was a few, Elaine Boozler. Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of women who were standing as comedians. I didn't want to hear that you were a woman and what your woman problem is and all this. It's okay if that's exactly who you become, but it shouldn't have. I didn't want you to walk through the door, I'm a woman. For me. Other
or
people
apologizing. Hi. Yeah. Sorry about hang.
That. And I was young too when I started. I was 24, so I would show up with, I put on two bras so people didn't know I had breasts, and put on the vest and the jacket, which was the uniform of the female comic back then.
Well, that's very gay.
Well, I think I am very gay, but not with women. Okay. You know what I mean? I was trying to tell somebody that I probably have toxic masculinity because I had to protect me at all times. They would throw us in those condos. I'd show up in a condo with two strange men. I stayed with, what's his name? Remember the Vince Champ, the rapist?
Right? Yeah, that was, those were very, very, very soon became toxic. And yeah. I very soon said, I'm not staying in any more of these condos. It was just not fun. But yeah. How did you get started? When did you get started?
Well, I'm from Cleveland, and I had went to college. My parents had moved to a place called the Quad Cities. We did a show there once, right?
Okay.
And I didn't know anybody. It was the summer I graduated, and I was supposed to go have an internship of a degree in fashion. And I hung out with them, and there was nothing to do for like a 21-year-old kid. I didn't know what to do. And so I got a job. They had a Funny Bone, weirdly owned by the guy who owned the Cleveland Improv that I used to sneak in because I loved stand-up. But I didn't really know.
We worked together there, right, at the Funny Bone?
Yes, yes.
Is it still there?
No. It was a good one, too. Yeah. It was a really good one. Yeah.
I didn't get a chance. I had just started back doing comedy again when I went there. And it was one of the better early experiences I had. But
they made me. So what happened for me is I got a job just waiting tables so I could watch the show. I thought it'd be fun. I could watch some comedy, make a little money, and then I'd be out. And a woman came through as a headliner. And it's one of those, I'll just be honest, like it was one of those ones that she was a beautiful woman, but she had no chops. It was a total Hollywood plant. And we see those throughout, you're going to see them throughout right. the comedy careers, right? And I watched her go from supposedly headliner to they moved to feature and had, you know, had the feature come in. And then by the time it was done, she was emceeing. Because she just couldn't, she didn't have the chops. She was right. still ultimately beautiful and people wanted to see her on stage. And I said, wow, I went home like a big mouth. And I have this, my parents are both first generation Italians. So very traditional. My father was a pro and a semi-pro football player. So very masculine. Like I wanted to be, I'm from Cleveland. I wanted to be Jane Kennedy. I wanted to be a sports reporter. And my father twisted my brain, was like, just didn't want his daughter in a locker room with naked men, but he could have got better seats for things. but I went home and said, I'm as funny as this lady. And because we were all sitting around and my brothers were like, bet. And I was like, let's do this.
Okay.
And I did an open mic and that was, and then I didn't realize it was open to me, like my mind was blown. Like I didn't know it was something I could participate in.
Yeah.
And I still don't know sometimes.
We've all said that. If I could count the number of women, you know, and men who said that time, the first time on stage when the skies opened up and the sun shone down and a light came in and, and you knew this was what you wanted to do. It's a magic moment that a lot of people deny themselves experiencing because they just won't try it.
I know. Marcia, you know what I always equate it to? Do you ever, I love vampire movies, call me sick. But you know, there's that moment in like a vampire movie when the human goes, what are you? That's the moment that you become a comedian. Right there, where you're like, cease.
You find out who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it was so natural. I started when I was 20. And the first time I went on stage, I had no idea what I was doing. But the laughter and the approval and all of that was just, I couldn't stop talking. I talked straight for 2-3 days. It was life changing. But so you went on stage, and then what happened? I mean, we know about that time that we have that light shine down.
Yeah.
But then there's got to be a second time, which usually sucks. So how did that work out for you?
Well, you know, I think it's one of the things I miss about whether it's stand-up at that time, or even I just explained to a friend of mine, whose child, I just went to their daughter's wedding where she married a woman and it was a full blown thing. I said, I miss a little bit of being an outsider because when you, then you really knew who the allies were and you really knew that you had, a perspective. And being a comic helped me. I've always been an outsider. Even when I was an insider, I was an outsider. You know what I mean? I've always never felt like I kept waiting to get kicked out of things, you know?
Yes, our imposter syndrome.
Yes. I keep waiting to go, you know, hey, you're not really. So
can I come through this door? Is it okay if I go through there?
Yes, right. And so I felt like, I think getting on stage, I was the only place I ever felt like, all right, they're not going to kick. Just keep them laughing. Just tell them all about, let me tell you about me before you want to try to tell me about me. Because there's nothing you could say about me that I already don't know. And I think that always helped me. And I did open mics and I just started talking about my flaws and things like that, and growing up the way I grew up, because I had a very different mind than the traditional culture that I came up in. I mean,
okay, you came up in a traditional Italian family,
right? Yes, yeah.
And like when you talk first generation,
yeah, first generation. When you talk about, not clearly, I can't compare my culture to slavery, but my grandfather did come here. My great-grandfather came here as an indentured servant. And then my grandfather, in World War II, they took everything away from him because he was part of there was a group of Italians that they felt supported Mussolini. And they came in and stripped their businesses and placed them in jail when they were, quote unquote, American citizens, you know, had done all the things. So I come from this where women, you know, they grew up, they learned to cook, and they got married, and they pushed out a bunch of babies, and they turned the other cheek when their husbands did X, Y, Z. And I refused to do any of it. I refused to learn how to cook. I was like, I'm not cooking. I'm not clean. I'll clean for me because I like it neat, but I'm not cleaning for you. And I was really just basically militant about it in my 20s. I was like, people go, when are you going to get married, my relatives? And I'd be like, you'll be dead. Don't worry about it. Like, it's not.
Well, people don't understand that during, you know, the 50s and 60s, and I'm sure it was like this before, but especially when the nuclear family became the ideal, a woman was supposed to be owned by two men in her life, her father, and then the man he gave her to for life. That was it. She wasn't supposed to know any other men. She wasn't supposed to, in fact, hardly even talk to them. She really wasn't supposed to leave the house. So doing stand-up in 1972, 74, was radical in itself.
Yes.
And all of the women who came along after were also being a woman was a radical statement, especially if you're standing up and speaking your mind, whatever it is. It didn't have to be to political or whatever, but if you're standing there going, I think I have the right to knit if I want to knit. This was not something that was done. So once you're doing, you know, open mics and stuff, that don't pay no bills.
No, I was sponsored by a radio station. My very first open mic was brought to the club by a radio station who hired me to be the sidekick on a morning show. And I would do open mics and work at the club. And then I became a house MC. And then the show became mine. And I would bring comics in. Probably about 8 months in, the show became my show. And I got a sidekick. And I'd bring comics in every Friday. Whoever was at the Funny Bone, if they were good people, which most of them were, I'd bring them in and I'd interview them on Friday, and then I'd take them to breakfast, and I became a student. That's what I did for 2.5 years while I was working at the radio station house. But I learned from some of the best that were on the road, which helped me, because then when I went on the road, I was able to go with some of the best. John Panette took me on the road for forever. D.L. Hughley took me, Dom Irrera. There were some really good guys that looked out for me, and it established that, because like I had this thing that I was not dating a comic. I wasn't going to date, because I knew boys. I knew locker rooms from my father. I knew all those things. And I knew that if I slept with one, that I was living with two new ones the next week. And some of them would go back and go be telling everybody this and that. Now, not that I didn't care, because I've always chosen who I want to be with and sleep with, and that's on me. And I never subscribed to that. But I just didn't want some of them to think I would sleep with them. You think you get this? Come on now.
That's something weird. Again, like when you are gay, people assume you just want every woman you see. And you know, I don't want every comic.
I know, but you know, that was funny for me too, because when I got into comedy, which was already a weird thing for a woman, then even within my community, even within the comics, it was an anomaly, because I quickly learned, for the most part, most of the women were gay, because they had only gay women were strong enough to have that. I'm going to take an Atlas and a car, and I'll see you when I see you, and I'll figure out where I'm going.
Yeah.
Right. It's a very masculine mentality. And it happened to be that a lot of the women were gay. But for me, it was just that I didn't realize that. And it's again, goes back to what I was saying with my friend and her daughter. I'm like, you don't even know what it was like. I miss a little bit of those days where you just, you were an ally. We would go to I could go to a gay club and it would be private. Like, I remember when it was like a private society.
Well, you had to find it. It was very repressive.
Yes.
You know, and I talk about it in my act. I didn't come out until I was in my 60s. I come out publicly, it was just something that was not done. I came out to family and friends much, sure, much earlier, but it was something you were supposed to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
So you start going out on the road, and like now you're on a TV show, right?
No, I did a movie. I wish
I never,
for some reason, for me, it's been so, listen, I love being a monologist. I love doing pure stand-up. It's all I've ever done. I worked my way from MC to feature to headliner. But when I got to LA in the early 2000s, so I'm 10 years in, they didn't know what to do with me. I mean, I did a lot of Tonight shows and I did a lot of specials, but I would go and sit in these rooms with these executives. And I just don't think I did enough. I'll be really honest. I don't have the art of the schmooze. My friendships are my friendships, for real. That's where I think the Italian kicks in with me. I can't kiss somebody's ass because they sign a paper. It's just not. There was a guy that literally ran HBO and he was a schmuck. And I sat there with my managers and we were supposed to get a half hour deal. They were giving out HBO half hours. And then those were development deals. And we were just having a good time. And my managers at the time were super powerful. You probably know them. God rest their soul. Well, Larry Bresner and David Steinberg. Mm-hmm. They had Robin and Billy. And I was so lucky. They loved me. And they took me in the same rooms that they took Robin and Billy. And they did for me exactly what they did for Robin and Billy, except I had no money or respect or body of work behind me.
Yeah, but you had good people.
Yeah, we were sitting there in this room, and the guy, the president of HBO, brought his underlings, because less about me even and more about David and Larry. And we had a great time. And at the very end, he puts his head up, his hands behind his head like this, and kicks his feet up. And the guy had on these purple plaid paisley brown, was so weird, socks. And he said to me, "You have any questions for us?" Like it was basically a done deal. And I, just being me, go, "Yeah, how ugly were the socks that you reached over in the drawer? What's left in your drawer if those are the socks that you put on?" And his face, he fell. He got all red. Everybody was laughing. He was he got up. He actually hit his girlfriend in Vegas about a month and a half later. You remember that guy? And he lost his position, but that was it.
There's a lot of people that I could choose from that fit the description.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, because he tried to sue me once when I told this story before. So,
well, I often say that everybody is stereotyped in this business.
Yes.
white men are stereotyped as heroes, good guys, and their women are always stereotyped as second to this mythical hero. Black people we know have been demonized and stereotyped forever. The typical Italian family that we have been introduced to over and over again. Did you ever have to push back against that kind of people trying to put you in that box?
Well, you know, what's funny is there was never really a box for it. And I really do come from MOOC. So it was, you know, like I really do, you know, I was a really, for me, I was excited. I did a show in 2004 that was that competition show, Last Comic Standing. And we were lucky enough that we were the season that it exploded. It had, you know, a lot of our friends, Alonzo Bowden, Gary Goldman, Kathleen Madigan, Ant, myself, Corey Holcomb, Bonnie McFarlane, Todd Glass, like Jay London. It was a phenomenal season. And we had 18 million viewers. And a lot of them, this was the early internet. And when criticism started coming from the internet and people would say mean things. And when I would get criticized, it was always that I was talking about being Italian too much. Now, first of all, it's all I knew. I grew up with on stage, talk about what you know. I lived no life in my 20s. I lived my map in my car. So I observed people. I talked at people. I had no life in my 20s. I was traveling to be a comic. So I wasn't living in between. But I was also super excited that they talked about, when they were talking about me, only talking about being Italian, they forgot that I was a woman. So it's like, oh, you guys didn't even realize. I snuck that one right in.
Well, there's a lot of history about, you know, people immigrating and all in the stereotypes and, you know, white adjacent, which is what I called some people who were, had their names changed and tried to just exist, but without being assimilated into this foreign blondness. You know, I'm an American, but I still have my own background and personality. But there's so many other questions. I mean, I'm sitting here going, nobody said anything about a comedy Sopranos with you as the godmother.
Yeah, you know, I pitched a show like that once and it got like it got all the things across the board. And I don't know, I used to get to the, like, when I was young, I was cuter. They didn't know what to do with me. They really didn't. And I just wasn't one, Marsha. I was so excited just to work. I made a mistake when I got Hollywood to look at me. That's when I went on the road and really got some money, because I made the road pay me back for all those years of paying me $50. You know what I mean? Like all those dates. So I think I feel like Hollywood is either you're lucky, because look, it's not skill. It's not a meritocracy. Very few of the best ever get what they deserve. Right? Let's be honest. There are so many that are great and that because they've learned how to play the game, or Hollywood has deemed, and you know who told me this? Mooney. Mooney said, Hollywood every once in a while will say, I need a woman, check. I need a black man, check. I need a fat guy, check. And if you happen to be the woman or the black guy or the fat guy, whatever it is, then that's your turn. But it's not, somehow those little guys in the room, and then when they get one fat guy, then they want the other fat guy. Like, so it'll be the year of the fat guys.
Yeah, well, that's the five stages of show business. You know, who's Marsha Warfield? Get me Marsha Warfield. Get me a young Marsha Warfield. Get me somebody like Marsha Warfield. And who's Marsha Warfield? I mean, there's a cycle that we all go through. So, yeah. But would you do that? Would you do that kind of show? Like somebody came up tomorrow and said, The Godmother.
I would do it if I could tell the true stories of how, like, it's deeper than just mafioso stuff. Mafia started because when the Italians came to this country, like my grandfather, Luigi Piscitelli, he came as an indentured servant. They did not give him his papers. You would come in the country, they would keep all your papers. WAP is without papers. That's what WAP is. And you were, and for those, there's people who don't even know that's a derogatory term. You know that, but you know. So when they didn't give a lot of my people their papers, the mafia, which they had tried to escape in the old country because they were just gangs, but the mafia here came to liberate its people. And that's how it started. It didn't start about a drug culture. It didn't start about prostitution or gambling. Well, maybe always gambling. But like it started to liberate its people. And it helped. There's a story. I wish my aunt was still alive. But John Hinton, our mutual friend, will tell you I had my grandmother's sister, Luigi's daughter, Carol. Carol in the 1959 married a black man in Cleveland, and what they went through, I'd love to tell their story, because the mafia came and helped her, because there was some situations going on, and there were, because they couldn't find a place to live. Right. It didn't work in the Italian neighborhood. It didn't work in the black. It certainly didn't work in the outer white neighborhoods. So she ended up reaching out, and they came and protected them just like they would protect a store owner. So I think those stories, if I could tell those stories. Yeah. A lot of people don't know.
The biggest lynching at one time was Italians.
Yeah, yes.
And the signs that said no black people, no Jews, no Italians, they weren't welcome either. So yeah. We've all been struggling for recognition, just for a recognition of your basic humanity. That's all people are asking. And when you put that up against one side who wants to dominate and control and roll over everybody, and the rest of the people who all they want is just stop fucking with me.
Yes. And when I do feel, though, and see if you're with me on this, unfortunately, oppression, or to whatever degree, or the outsideness, whatever it is, that is where the real comedy comes from. Because culturally, we laughed. We didn't laugh. We also come from a lot of guilt, and you can't say too many compliments. And there's a lot of stupid within the people issues. But anytime we gathered, we laughed because it was free. You know, laughter is something. When I went on the road and people would say mean things to me because they weren't used to seeing a woman, and by the late show, it's show me your tits or whatever. There's nothing you can say to me that my own family didn't say to me. There's no insult. I know this nose. I grew up with this nose. I never changed this nose. What are you going to say to me? Are you going to, you know, that my brother said it. They said it at the dinner table. What can you say to me?
Show me your dick. But I'm sorry.
I didn't want to see it. They didn't show me. They did that to me too.
See that from here, anyway. So now, we could talk forever. But now my sons want to come out and participate in this conversation a bit. But before they come out, they play a video that tells us what they've been up to the past few days. So let's start with my baby boy, my son, my problem child. I love him to death, but he likes to walk the streets. Let's see what he's been up to.
Ammo. Hunting eight out here in Vegas right now. I was feeling a little hungry for a cheese pizza, so I came up here to Pizza Hut, ordered. They have nowhere to sit, so I'm sitting right here on the floor. Come on.
Okay, well, we never know what he's going to be up to. So let's bring him out and have him explain himself. Please say hello to Skills.
Hey, Tammy. No, I haven't personally met her, but I know about comedy, you know what I'm saying? And it was great, the interview and everything I was hearing. But the videos I did this week, I did it numerous ones, but you know, I'll be sending so many, I'll be forgetting where I'm at. But I know I was just, it was some stuff going on.
You was in the alley last week, wasn't you? Was that?
Yeah, I was in the alley. I was in the alley.
Are you in the alley this week? You ain't in the
I wasn't in the alley, but I was in the bathroom. I was in the bathroom stall though.
Oh goodness. He's got pictures of himself in the bathroom on buses, planes, in hotels, in his house, everywhere. His scales in the bathroom.
Hysterical.
His thing. Anyway, before we get
because we have to do it.
Because before we get to our discussions, let's bring out your brother. Yes.
He's jealous.
Okay. They have real sibling rivalry. And in fact, before we bring him out, let's show the picture of you two switching clothes. Do we have that? Let's see that. They decided to switch clothes. Why did you do that? Why did y'all do that?
Because you suggested it, Ma. Hypothetically, okay. Kind of, you suggested it. So we got it together and was like, you know what? Bring your outfit. I'm going to bring your outfit. And we did it.
I love it.
You saw. Anyway, let's bring on your brother, no matter what you say. This is my oldest son, the one who looks just like me. And he has a special feature. He gay mansplains something. Let's take a look.
Well, hello, and welcome back to Gay Mansplaining. I'm Stephen Roberts. It's time to talk about some things that not everybody always wants to talk about. We're here to explain things to you that you may be too afraid to ask somebody else. Today, we're going to explore the concept of mind your own business. And by doing that, we're going to see what is your business and what is not your business. That can be very confusing, especially to white people. So I'm here to clear that up for everybody. So what is your business and what is not your business? If you don't know what's your business, you can discover it by a very simple method, and that is fuck around and find out. Yeah, do that, and you'll learn your lesson a few times, and you'll get a really good idea of what's your business and what's not your business. I will give you some examples of what is your business and what is not your business. So you might want to write these down, you know, because especially for my people, sometimes we need to write things down, put on a post-it note, maybe like on our grocery cart or on our dashboard, just so we can remember how exactly to mind our own fucking business. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so here's some examples of things that are your business. Your bank account balance, yay! That's your business. You need to purchase a new Coach purse. You need that new pair of shoes. You need to know what is in your bank balance, right? Your HIV or STI status, you need to know that so that you can, you know, carry on in that hookup that you have scheduled for tomorrow. How much your friend gets paid at work, that is definitely your business. You need to know that for your own personal information. So that you would definitely need to know that. Okay, and then here's things that are not your business. What people say about you. None of your business. They can, you know, they can take care of themselves. Say whatever you want about me. I don't give a shit. I'm moving on with my life. That's my business. You don't need to worry about my business. But if you are going to talk about me, I couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. How much your friend paid for her car. That is definitely not your business. You don't need to know how much she paid for her car. Leave her alone. She's got her own business. And then, of course, also not your business is what your bank account balance says. And you say, wait a minute, you said it was my business only when you're purchasing something. Otherwise, that's the bank's business. Let them handle what's in the bank on your account. If they don't like what's in there, you know, let them handle it. You don't need to know that. You just keep going on spending and, you know, shopping and doing the things that you need to do. And pretty much that is the difference between what's your business and what's not your business. I hope this clears things up for you. And I hope you have a great day minding your own business.
Okay, now that we've met him and his explanation, let's bring out my oldest son, Stephen Roberts. Hi, honey.
Hi, what do you mean, why did we switch clothes? You're the one that told us to do it.
I suggested it. I didn't know you were going to go out the next day and change clothes.
Well, I was on Skills show at Jimmy Kimmel's, and it was just like the most...
We lost you.
He froze. You really did switch clothes because it's Skills bacon.
Okay. So you
caught that, Tammy.
That's how you get out of stuff now.
You decided, let's change clothes.
So we did. And we tried to embarrass each other.
Oh, what did you? You brought Judy Garland.
I did.
And you brought Raymond.
Yeah, and my clothes. But his clothes was a lot tighter than I expected.
That's why you got to wear this. These are real coveralls. I wore them way before Dave because I actually owned a garage. This is what I wear all the time. This is my home uniform.
That's very good.
I can't wear a jumpsuit because I'm old and I have to pee a lot. I find myself, especially the ones, like I have a denim one with buttons, those metal buttons.
Yeah.
And I can't get out of that thing in time. It's just really not pleasant. So you guys heard this conversation, pretty wide-ranging freewheeling conversation. Do you have any questions or comments, Stephen?
You know, I don't have a question. I just, you know, it's just like everybody has to like come here and get abused to the very pulp that's left before they can actually live here, it seems like. It seems like as long as you're a little weaker, you're going to get taken advantage of. It's just like we just beat the shit out of each other. It doesn't matter if you're Italian or Irish and, you know.
Or gay.
Or, well, I mean, gay people didn't come here from somewhere else.
Well, they came from out the closet.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Do you mean in show business? Is that what you mean?
I mean, in America.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just, I think the human condition, that's how you know if you're strong. And I always believe that it is the weakest one from the herd falling off. And I think that, but you survive, you know? I mean, look at, this is not a thriving community, but look at Marsha. I'm not even trying to gas you up. I would say this if you weren't here. There are people that stayed completely true to themselves, but didn't conform and stood in their own truth and their own power, and it still is successful. And eventually it comes, does it come, whether it comes commercially or whatever, the respect comes. And that is the key. Respect is worth more than dollar. I'll take it 10 to 1 because it's all
You have to know what value is. We think money is a barometer of value. It has nothing to do with value. You know, if you don't want something and it costs a nickel, that's too much. It's not worth it to you because you don't want that thing. But if you do want it, it could be this cup. And if somebody said, well, that'll cost you $500. You'll give them that $500 because that's what it's worth to you.
Yes.
And we think too much about money. And I've never done this business for money. If it was about money, I'd have been out a long time ago.
I mean, look at Labubu. Do you know what that is?
No. And I'm wondering, oh, that's the little...
that's the little trolley kind of monstery fuzzy things.
There's one of those every 5-10 years. There's something.
Yes. Remember the little actual troll dolls?
There's always some kind of
and
little.
Beanie Babies.
I thought you was calling me Lil Boo Boo.
No, you just did a little boo boo.
It all goes back to the bathroom.
Comes around.
So, you know, to speak at what Tammy was talking about, you know, as far as people being strong. I just heard commentary just recently about the admiration of the gay community, specifically the gay male community during the HIV AIDS tragedies. Yeah. And that what he admired so much about it was the fact that the gay men would go to funerals in the morning, protest in the afternoon, and dance at night. And mm-hmm. that was kind of the way it worked. You mourned your friends, and then you went out and tried to get change. And then at night, you let your hair down and had some fun. And I thought, you know, that's what makes a community strong. It's when they can do all those. I mean, I think the AIDS quilt actually saved a lot of people's sanity. I really do.
Well, that whole time was very, I was in Los Angeles at the time. And when I got to Los Angeles, the gay community, the exuberance of the gay community, because it was just starting to explode being out, you know, and the parade was just starting and taking over. And it was something to see. You know, yeah. Santa Monica Boulevard would be packed, human to human. It was just a parade every weekend. And once the pandemic hit, when you would go to Santa Monica Boulevard, you see the difference. It was a ghost. There was nobody there. And that, to me, was the saddest thing I saw, that whole community had either run away or died. And it was a really hard thing to watch and to be part of, and to not know what was, you know, everybody was at risk and nobody was being told. And it was just a devastating time.
Go ahead.
I would say, I think it's a very weird thing that situations like this happen, and where you're just talking about that exuberance, Marcia, where their people fell out and they had come out, and then it shoved people back in the closet because they were afraid. But you see the communities together. And nowadays, there are kids that are coming out. They don't even have to come out. Every gay person that I was friends with, that I would go with, I tell you, I went with four of my best friends to give the speech to their parents. They don't have to do that anymore. They don't risk complete family alienation. They don't. So they just, again, it's about history. No one who came before you. And being grateful to the elders. I'm not saying that people have to bow down and worship.
Yeah, they should bow down. They should bow down.
But still, there should be some acknowledgement of the time. You know what I mean?
Give offerings and alms and
flowers are important.
Flowers,
yes.
And all that kind of stuff. But skills, what do you say?
Look, what first what I say is y'all gotta stop being so long until y'all get to me to ask me my question, because I've been forgot my question.
I asked you first. Shut up. I asked you first.
I had a couple of things though. I had about what you were saying in the comediosity earlier, but I forgot, like I said, because we was long.
Okay, but, well, you got it now?
No, it's gone.
You think because it's longer because you're high?
It's my fault.
I'm high in spirits, but I'm not high in the mind. My mind is clear.
Okay. Yeah, we did. So I was,
yes. So yeah, it's gone. It's gone.
It's
gone.
It's all right, baby.
Cause I got high.
You left it in Steven's pocket.
Why is it his fault?
Because he had me wear them tight ass pants last week, and my memory ain't been the same since.
And
since
so, them pants squeezed your brains through your balls.
Thank you.
Okay, well, you know, you gave me clothes that made me smell like marijuana for about 7 days. I couldn't wash it off. So.
But that's family, and that's
that is
love.
Family.
Oh, I remember. About your history, because I had did some study about you being from the Midwest and everything, and you starting at a young age, and then you kind of answered it when she was interviewing you, because you were saying basically it was no plan B. You know, you when you got into this, it was comedy. You know what I'm saying? And you just learned, like, but you took the ball and ran with it quick. You wasn't like, okay, all right, I'm gonna go do these other things. You didn't mention that, so I just felt that energy from that. Then, Ma, when you were saying from, I think it's coming back to me about the, no, it's still gone.
But I like the way you reeled us in, you know, because you had us all. We were all like,
and then you just. Then I was reaching for it. You know how you, with the fish.
You had us. It got away. You know, you're a wonderful storyteller when you have a punchline.
I didn't have a plan B skills, but I try to tell my son this. I did do a lot of things under the way I was, where I was going. I mean, you don't start out. We make 50 cents on the dollar almost still with women. And back then there was nothing. So I was living in downtown Cleveland, and I found a bunch of coffee shops. This is before Starbucks and all that stuff. And I made Italian cookies, are called pizzelles. And I made 100 dozen and I sold them to coffee shops. So that wow. There's always, I always did something on the way to where I was going. The only thing I didn't do was the funny women of Playboy, because I thought it had nothing. God bless those women who did it. But I just knew that for me, I wasn't cast in things. I was on the road doing, and I just knew that it would be uncomfortable and people would forever, even though it was $25,000, and that old man did not leave me alone for years, but I just didn't see me being naked.
Was that the Playboy channel?
They did a thing called the Funny Women of Playboy that was a spread in the magazine, and they came to me 3 years in a row, and
you're being a real spread.
It was like, but that's what they wanted. And I was like, I just don't see how that's funny. I didn't need to create an act to do that. I could have done that. I could have not wrote.
You still could. OnlyFans is an option.
Yeah.
I when I started, HBO and Showtime were just taking off, and there were then Cinemax came along, and other cable channels came along, and one was Playboy Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And Playboy Channel started off doing that annoying soft porn. You know, that kind of, it's so fucking annoying. It's we're riding horses, like a tampon commercial, you know, with the gauzy, filmy things and hair flowing. And then, you know, a half an hour later, somebody kisses a foot or something. It was just annoying. But they started
like
doing,
the sneaking on it. Emmanuel, it was this one. Emmanuel.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Emmanuel, yeah. Yeah, well, I remember Behind the Green Door and, Debbie Does Dallas and all that.
I remember trying to get through the static to see what they were doing. Or if you moved the dial on the cable box, you could, if you got it right in the middle, sometimes it would come through. You did it after everybody went to sleep.
Well, see, since I wasn't editing my language, Playboy was a natural for me. I did a lot of shows on the Playboy channel. Well, we appreciate you.
No, I appreciate you. Always, when every time I went to Sherry, I tried to get your dressing room.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I was so blown away by that gesture. It just, I mean, she's got what? Lucille Ball and
you,
Carol Burnett.
Lucy, Whoopi, and who's the other one?
I don't know. Was it Carol? It wasn't Carol Burnett.
I don't think so.
But, I mean, that's pretty stellar.
Funny.
Company.
But I
was so blown away to be included in that number.
No, I was, Sherry was really good to me. I wrote for about a year on it, and she's just a good person. And when we were discussing the rooms and she said your name, I was like, yeah, this is amazing. And we talked about, like, we got to get that hat that you wore in the promo. You had this beautiful headshot with it. There you go. That's it. I love it.
Yeah, when I started back, I wanted to be sharp.
I want to do a show. I want to do some shows with you. I don't know what we need to do. If we should, you know, I'm a road crew person, but let's figure it out. Call me anytime.
I'm ready.
All right. Same.
But thank you for being with us, Tabby. I appreciate you and hanging out with you. It's been a lot of fun. And please don't be a stranger. Come back and see us again. What's happening for you next? Where are you going to be next?
I'm on the road. I'm filming a new special. I don't know if anybody wants it, but we're going to film a new special. We'll see what happens.
We are all waiting with bated breath. What?
yeah, you know, and I'm always on the socials. It's easy to find me, Tammy Pescatelli, even if you don't spell it correctly. Somehow you'll be able to find me.
All right. Well, I'm glad we found you and you found us. Come back again sometime, okay?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Good night. So that was wonderful.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So what's up this week? What's up with you guys?
I just remembered what I wanted to say about the look, Ma.
What?
Same. Oh, Black Death. Black Death.
Oh, Black Death, Richard Pryor. Yes.
Yes. When I watched that, I'm watching it, right? And like 2 minutes in, I'm really watching it. I'm trying to, and then I'm getting it, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the actual, like, and then it got so much funnier because it's showing like how far ahead of time that was, you know what I'm saying? But the same happens now, you know what I'm saying? Same repetitive, the music from we, and then it started making me remember what you was trying to explain to me about in Sinners, you know what I'm saying? That scene with the music and how it, you know, helped, I mean, how it did us, you know what I'm saying? And kids, and then at the end of that video, when the kids just, everybody died, they slowly all died, and then, you know, you waiting for the claps, but the claps was everybody died. You know what I'm saying? That was standing ovation.
I'm like, all right.
Yeah, all right. Like I did good.
Job well done.
Job well done.
It was it's a very prescient commentary, and I think it's worth everybody watching. It's another look of Richard just being Richard.
Yeah, and it's the, like, 1970 was when you really start seeing heavy metal come out. Black Sabbath and AC/DC, and that they were all coming out, and so he was making a commentary 5 years later when metal was becoming prominent at the same time that punk was and everything else, and so he's making this comment that, you know,
and like the drug culture and the threat of, and what are we teaching our kids? What are our kids getting from this? Are you aware? And now you have or have had a lot of incidences where the drugs and the music have not really come together well. And there have been some real tragic moments. So, like I said, he was ahead of his time, and I take every opportunity I can to sing his praises, because not only was he my idol, he was very good to me. And I appreciate that to this day. So, but right now we have another video. I just think this is funny. Man bets his wife that he can laugh. He can laugh without smiling. And I think maybe we should all try to stay in touch with our ability to laugh, even when we can't smile. Take a look at this. I think it's pretty funny. What?
Hey, baby, dude.
Why are you smiling at me like that?
Because you're smiling at me.
So you match my energy, huh?
It's hot.
That's hot. Likes that. Anyway, before we go, I got to tell you something.
Tell me what?
I learned how to laugh without smiling.
You did not.
I did. And I want to show you, but first, you got to tell me a good joke. Second, if I can prove to you that I can do this, you gotta leave me alone for the rest of the weekend, because NBA just started and I'm trying to watch all the games. NFL's ongoing, you know how that is. So do we have a deal?
And if you can't do it, then you don't get to watch none of that, and you get to just spend time with me.
Okay. Just tell me a joke so I can...
Okay, why can't you trust the king of the jungle?
Why not?
Because he always be lying.
Can you do it, Marcia?
Huh?
Can you do that?
No, I can't do that. I don't even want to practice that. I don't even want to know if I can do that. It was the funniest looking thing. That cracked me up when I saw it.
Skills, can you do it?
What?
Laugh without smiling?
Laugh without smiling.
Yeah.
Do it.
I can do it.
Do it.
No, you have to make a sound. You have to make the laughing laugh. Sound.
You're not laughing.
Oh.
Like,
you're smiling.
That's a good first effort. You sound a little like a dolphin, but yes, that's pretty good. But
no, we made, no, I'm coming back. Watch this.
Okay, that's a noble effort, but I think homeboys got
what? You. Wait a minute, you gonna laugh and then gonna say that's a noble effort? I can't do it, but
homeboy got you. Tried. I'm sorry. He. That was the funniest shit I ever saw. But anyway, thank you both for being here. Audience who is watching, thank you for your. What are you doing? Anyway, if you're watching, thank you so much for watching and supporting us. We'd appreciate a like or subscribe or share or, you know, all of the things that people ask people with podcast. I mean, people ask their viewers and listeners to do. We'd appreciate that because we
Famo. Oh, no. Go ahead, Mom.
We like doing this and we'd like to continue. So we need your support and your help to keep it, to keep this thing going. And I thank you in advance. Last week, before we get into that, where are you guys going to be? You want to start, Stephen?
I am going to be in Greece.
Whoa.
Taking a vacation.
Whoa.
But the next time you can see me will be in Reno at the Laugh Factory, August 27th, 28th. August 27th is my birthday. You can see me August 28th through September 1st at the Laugh Factory in Reno.
All right. What are you doing?
Good. He said he's going on. Him and Joseph, they're going on vacation. There's going to be a lot of tying up and stuff going on.
Not tying up. Pineapples.
Anyway. No, yeah, for real. You know, when they're going to go out in the country and act like.
Trust me.
They're going to do that, you know, role play.
Let's be Greek. Let's wear togas.
When we get done, look up pineapples on cruise ships.
Pineapples on cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And with that in mind, where are you going to be tied up?
Okay. this Friday, I'll be at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club for my Red Seat at 11:30. Show those skills Fridays. And this Sunday and Monday, I'll be with Lunel at Jimmy Kimmel's for her Rest.
And then next week after that, is that your anniversary?
Oh, no, in 2 weeks, on the 22nd. Right. Yes, okay. Yes.
That's right,
because, yes, that's the my anniversary, and well, I ain't going to say it, it's a surprise guest going to be on the show.
Ooh, all right, then. Well, we'll look forward to that. I'm going to be here, and next week's show is going to be, I don't even know how to describe it. I don't even know. What?
He froze. That's why he was going, because he realized he was freezing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I thought he was having pain. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we lost Skills Feed. Maybe we can get him back before we officially close out this evening's festivities.
But it was a like good episode.
You know, good people. I'm fortunate to know, have met some really good people in this business, and it's fun to get together and just talk about it. I think we do a grown folks show, okay? No question about that. But grown folks, people are grown at 18, 21, you know, and so they can get something from my guests or our guests because they have wisdom, they have experience, they have stories to tell that qualify as history people can, you know, maybe learn some from or get some encouragement and validation of, oh, okay, this is how the game goes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part I like the best, that to get people to see from pros what it is to be a pro and how what they had to go through and what we all had to go through for us to get here, for the game to be what it is today. So I thank Tammy for that, for coming and sharing with it. Wouldn't it be great if we had her and Kim and Elaine you know, all on the show at once. Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, just have a women's show.
That's a great idea.
I don't know if it would be a lot of crosstalk, but it would be fun. Anyway, looks like we've lost my baby boy. I'm sorry. I know he's a fan favorite, and he's a favorite around here. I love both my sons. I love all my children, and I don't care if y'all don't like the rest of the family. No, I have many, many sons and daughters, and I am happy to have them. Anyway, we're gonna get at it. Like I said, next week's guest. Can I say it?
You should.
Next week's guest is an icon. And we throw that word around, but she is an icon, and she's not in show business, never was in show business, but she's one of the most important people in Black American history and American history, modern American history. Angela Davis is going to be here. Are you kidding me?
And I'm not going to be here.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But
I can't believe it.
That I probably won't be able to talk. I just probably won't. Every woman, when Myra J was here, and she made an Angela Davis reference because she was just part of our growing up. She was such a role model for us for a number of reasons. We didn't often see women in our age group or somebody, you know, a little older than us, standing up for what was right. And I'm sure she has a fascinating story to tell. I can't wait to hear it. So tune in to when we do that, because it's going to be it's going to be a wild ride. So
it's going to be a double listener. You're going to go back and listen again.
Yeah. I'm going to listen. Hey, look who's back. Welcome back. Hi.
Welcome back.
What did you do? Have to go to the bathroom?
No. When I left out, you know, when I was out, my phone, when I got back, I had to get right into the show. I didn't get a chance to charge my phone back up.
Ah, so.
Because when you froze up, we heard you go, no. Like that. And then you were like frozen like this. Yeah, like you're all pissed off. You're like, no.
So I'm glad it was something minor that you could address and get back to us. And I'm congratulate you for your 2-year residency.
Yay!
That's a big deal, and I'm proud of you. And I wish you all the best. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And what? Steven, yes, your brother's a nice guy.
Okay.
And Stephen, I couldn't do this without you, honey. You are producing this show and making sure it runs on time and everything runs well, except when Skills gets frozen. But that's not in your control.
I got to give it to you, man. I'm glad that we got a white person, because if it was for me, I mean, I'm glad you're my brother, because if it wasn't for me, we would.
I wouldn't make you look so cool.
What?
We wouldn't have been online. I don't think I would have figured it out in time.
Well, if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't have ever worn ball hugging pants with a Judy Garland shirt. So
that's who that was. Okay.
Yeah. speaking of Judy Garland, before we get out,
I'm just glad it wasn't the lady that told on Emmett Till.
Who the hell is gonna have on a Carolyn Bryant shirt?
See, I didn't even know her. Okay, thank you.
You didn't even know her name.
No. Okay, you made my thought go fly. Now,
Carolyn Bryant is not a gay icon.
No. Oh, speaking, and neither is the person I'm thinking of, but I wanted to say, you know, when you grow up Black and you talk, you know, equality and stuff, people tend to think that your whole world, all your influences and everything is just Black, 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 Black. And there's a lot of that in my life. But I grew up in America in the 50s and 60s when there wasn't a whole lot of representation. So my early influences were all of the white comics that were on Ed Sullivan and The Tonight Show and variety shows, and the ones that had their own shows. And there's one guy that I think is really underrated, who I loved and who I think everybody should take a look at again. He was cool at a time when cool wasn't defined that way. And I'm talking about Jackie Gleason. Jackie was funny. He was sharp. He was always well-dressed. And he loved the good life. And so he presented this image of cool. And in himself, he was okay with his size and his presence. And he played Minnesota Fats in The Hustler, where he had arguably two of the three coolest icons, white male in show business at that time, Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason in that movie, and the other guy was Steve McQueen. If we want to go one more, we have to add Sean Connery. Those were the three white guys who were really cool, you know, at that time. But anyway, Jackie Gleason was also very funny. He was also an abuser in the on his show. He was always threatening to beat the hell out of his wife.
Oh, yeah.
And she never paid any attention to him. He was obviously not a threat because she just kept on keeping him in line.
Look, she'd look at him like this.
Ralph.
But
Jackie was a big influence on me. And I realized that like just a few days ago, how much I really took from Skills and Jackie Gleason. And he was also an accomplished musician. He released about a few classical music albums. So anyway, if you haven't seen him, take a look at Jackie Gleason. Lastly, as we get out of here, sometimes it's easy to be down when you are facing challenges, and as we are right now as a nation. But then you see somebody who triumphs over their own adversary, and it gives you, you know, kind of a new perspective. We're going to go out with a video that I think will help us all feel a little bit better about the challenges we face. Thank you all. Good night. My hairy baby.
You know, it could be very easy for me to be feeling sorry for myself. I was born with no arms and one leg. Or even making yourself feel like you're less than or you're not good enough. I just never let myself become down because of the cards that I've dealt. Game must be played, and I refuse to lose. I refuse to allow myself to sit by and be sad or upset or even let life pass me by. Just because a situation gets hard or it's not likely or ideal for most people doesn't mean that I don't have goals, doesn't mean that I don't have dreams, doesn't mean that I don't have things that I want to achieve in life. I mean, prime example right here, I love to eat, but that don't mean that I'm gonna have to sit around and wait for somebody to come feed me or cook for me. Do you know how many times I've burnt myself before? But that don't mean I should stop trying or I should not try to figure it out anymore, because at the end of the day, guess what? I still need to eat. Now, was it hard? Absolutely. I'd be lying to you right now if I sit here and told you guys that majority of the stuff that I know how to do or show you guys that I know how to do, it didn't frustrate me or I didn't even feel like doing it anymore or just accepting the fact of I can't do this. Let me wait till somebody else come help me. I'm not using none of those excuses why I can't get to where I'm trying to get to, but that ain't bringing my goals closer to me. I'm gonna eat. Side note, I've never made meatballs, rice, and gravy for myself ever in my life. This is my first time. But what am I supposed to do? Wait for somebody to cook it for me? Wait till they get time? Oh, now I can make it? There's no excuses. I'm not using none of my excuses on why I can't do anything, and neither should you. Metaphorically, you need to go out here and eat. Make it happen. Stop waiting on situations or stop using excuses or certain stuff that didn't happen to you for the reason why you can't go out here and be great. And if you felt this and understood what I was talking about, go ahead and drop it in the comments. I'm gonna eat. Cause I'm gonna eat, you hear me? And you know what today is, so say it with me. Say it with me. Mm-hmm. This is another Motivational Monday.
Boy, I did my thing on this right here. Go ahead and go eat.
She got a way no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. But now she gets backed up again and again. I'm talking about Marsha. Marsha, you know you got it. You know you got it. No one can tell a joke.